Okay. What is it now? One. Okay. I am told that it's one. Okay. Let's simmer down. Simmer down. Simmer down. Okay. The first some announcements, and then I want to open it up for some questions. First announcement is that several people have been asking me what bucket do you put your thing? Is it by first name or last name? I intend it to be by last name. Okay. Now recognize that we're using this basically as a hash function. I'm going to talk about hash codes and hash tables in the next couple of classes, but this is actually a good example of hashing. I want everybody's assignments to all go to the same bucket. Okay? So, if you put it by the letter of your last name all the time, okay, all your papers for the semester will end up in the same pile, and that's what I want to have happen. If you really want to be strange and use the middle, the first vowel of your last name or something like that, you could do it, but I want it by hash. Last name is best. But we're using it like a hash code, which we'll talk about in a few classes, to collect things with the same IDs. Okay, any other questions here? Two other administrative things before we go any further. One is that as of now, I have posted homework one on the course webpage. I didn't bring out printouts, so I'm going to let you look at it from the course webpage. The thing to note is that we're going to be trying this experiment with peer grading in here. And we have tried to, on the first assignment, there will be detailed instructions about how you're supposed to submit things and how you're supposed to grade things with the peer assignment. Okay? Read them. We'll talk about it in subsequent weeks. Now, undoubtedly, these instructions are wrong. Okay, but be patient because we're going to have to figure this out over the. We've never done this before. It is going to no doubt take some trial and error to get it working. One thing that seems to be true is that everybody is going to have to submit their own homework. You guys are working in pairs. You're going to have to make an electronic copy of your homework by either scanning it or typesetting it as a PDF. Okay. Each person has to turn in a PDF, okay, to get graded. And but you and your partner can turn in exactly the same file. That's kind of what the principle is. Any questions about that? Okay, we will try to figure that out, start thinking about the homework, and we will work this out as time goes by. Any questions? Okay, any other logistical questions? There were some questions about people wanting to watch the lectures on the remote, the Echo 360, the recordings, and they have observed that the lecture slides are not a separate channel in the recording. That seems to be a function of the room, okay? A weirdness of this particular room that supposedly the people who care about have been notified, and supposedly they will try to fix it. We will see if they try to fix it. Or we'll see if they fix it. We won't see if they try. But what's important is if you want a copy of the lecture slides to view along with the recording of me doing my thing, recognize that the lecture slides are downloadable from the course website. And so you can certainly scroll through it in a separate window by yourself if you're interested. Any questions? Yes. I believe the question about is it available for live stream. I believe I asked for it to be made available by live stream. Is it clear that I failed? Okay. There seems to be a problem where I can either get them to trim off the nonsense part at the beginning or the end, or have it immediately available for live streaming. And I like the idea of them trimming it. Okay? So that's kind of why it's not available here. Just to take a vote, would you rather see garbage at the beginning and end of this lecture, or would you rather see it live streamed? Who here would rather see garbage on the beginning and the end? Okay, wait, no, you get two choices. Okay, right. You get a choice of no garbage, you're right, no garbage or no live stream, right? Who here would rather have no garbage on the films? Who here would rather have garbage but live stream? Okay, I see a little bit of a preference for live streaming. I will reconsider my position. It isn't necessarily going to change, but I'll reconsider it. That wasn't a mandate, but we will see. Okay, any other questions logistically? Yes. Is it past the homework turning in time? The answer is the moment I start talking about the daily problem, which is, unless there's another question, it's going to be now. Okay, any questions? So, boom. Okay. This time, but not next time, okay? It was acute, but we're not going to count it next time. Okay, this is why we do not count it next time. You understand that? Okay, if not, the rest of the class can watch people start in daily problems for the next hour and 15 minutes, or not. Okay, so no more. Okay, fair enough. Okay, so let's talk about the daily problem, which has to do with the big O notation. And in particular, it is about the, you know, basically what is the big O notation? It says, given pairs of functions, tell whether f of n is big O of g of n, fn is omega of g of n, or f of n is theta of g of n. Or maybe none of them, okay, if there's something really weirdly behaved functions. Okay? Look at the first problem we have with f of n is sort of a quadratic thing. G of n is a linear thing. Is f of n big O of g of n? I can't tell without going to the definition. Okay, so some people are asking me about where are these constants from these C's. To answer any of these questions, you go to the definition. What is the definition of f of n being big O of g of n? We say that f of n is equal to big O of g of n, if and only if what? If f of n is less than or equal to some constant times g of n. Okay, that's what it means to be big O of f of n, right? If I can find this constant, and also I guess the associated n naught, so that I know that I use for big enough n, then I know that this is true. So is there any constant I can multiply the right side by, 6n plus 7, to make it bigger than n squared? Can I multiply it by a billion? Can I multiply it by 10 billion? Certainly I can multiply it. But once I get n big enough, even if I make this a billion times n, 6n plus 7, there is no way that this is always going to be equal to n bigger than n squared. Because by the time n gets to be as big as this constant times itself times 6 is going to be bigger than, the n squared. Does everybody see that? So this cannot be, okay? And it is not big O of that, okay? Any questions? Now, how do I do the the next one it asks is about theta. Is this thing equal to theta of g of n? Okay, I can't do this without looking at the definition. Okay, the definition says this is true if and only if there is some c that we can multiply g of n such that it is less than f of n, where c is greater than 0, right? So is there any constant that I can multiply 6n by, 6n and change by, so that it is less than or equal to n squared, once we get for all n greater than n 0? What is a reasonable value of n here, of c here? 1. C equals 1, that makes that nice. Is there any value of n such that this is always going to be bigger than this? Suppose, let's say that it was just 6n here. Forget the 7 for a moment. What is the value of n naught such that n squared is always going to be greater than 6n? I think for n equals 7, right? If n is greater than 7, then 7 squared is greater than 7 times 6, and from then on it only gets worse. Does everybody see that? So since this is true, I've got my c and I got my n naught, then ding, 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 the omega holds. Okay? Any questions about that? Now, some of you may say, I can do this faster in my head. And you can do it faster in your head, so long as you get it right. Okay? If you're not sure of this or just getting used to these kind of things, you have, the way that you prove these things, the way that these things hold, is because you show me the constants. Okay? And this should be straightforward, so long as you go back to the definition. With some experience, I have 35 years of doing this, okay? So I can do this in my head, okay? But in general, you go back to the definition, okay? Was there a question here? Question there. So what should specify the idea, okay, in an ideal world, the way, if I said prove it, okay, you would need to show me your C and your N naught. Verify, show me that, okay? It's a state. If I'm just saying state, I guess you're getting away with what the right answer is. But the important thing to see here is that this is how you do it, okay? Is it theta of g of n? For the first one, the answer is no, because it's omega, but not big O. So I know it's not a theta, right? Any questions? Okay? Let's look at the second problem. Okay, the second problem, I've got n squared on one side versus n square root n on the other. Okay? Now, implicitly in doing this, I tend to drop the smaller terms. Now, why do I drop the smaller terms? Well, we'll show you why for sure today when we talk about dominance. But if not, the way that I think about it is, if I say, if I want to know about something about A plus B, suppose I tell you that of A plus B, A is greater than B. Okay? My claim is that this, okay, that 2A if I know that A is greater than or equal to B, does everybody agree that 2 times A is going to be greater than or equal to A plus B? Does everybody see this? This is the kind of trick that I'm really doing here, right? If I am saying I've got something big and something less big, the sum of big plus less big is less than twice big. Does everybody see that? And twice something is just another constant, right? You multiply something else, C by 2, or you divide it by 2, depending upon what you're doing. So does everybody see that if you're adding up a constant number of terms, the big O-ness of it is going to be governed by the biggest one? That's kind of, I guess, the informal way of doing it. Okay? But does that make sense to people? Okay? This is why when I'm doing these things, I mentally drop the smaller terms. Okay? Now, what am I going to be doing? I am going to be asking myself, is f of n equal to big O of g of n? Is it? Well, I can't do that in my head, but I can ask myself, n square root n, is that less than or equal to some constant times n squared? What would be a reasonable constant here? 1. Well, why is... Now, some people may say, well, wait a second. I don't see why 1's bigger than this. There's one little trick to see here. What does this, square root n look like? This is really n to the 1/2. Does everybody know that? You know it, but you recognize it. This really is now saying is n to the 3/2 less than or equal to c times n squared. Okay? And once you see this, then now it starts to look more easy, right? Because what can I, if I'm doing this carefully, I could say that n squared is really equal to n to the 3 halves times n to the 1 half. Does everybody agree with that? And now it should be clear that if n is greater than 0, this thing is c and n to the square root of n times this. And if so, then it's pretty obvious that this side has to be bigger than that, right? So under these conditions, yes, I get the big O holds. Any questions about that? Now, what about the other way? Let's do the omega thing. Does the omega thing hold? Okay, I can't tell without looking at the definition. The omega thing will hold if n to the 3 halves is greater than or equal to some constant times n squared. Is that possible? Is there any constant big enough, small enough, to drag this thing down? Okay? Suppose I set my constant to be 1 over a million. Okay? What would happen? Okay, suppose it is 1 over a million times n squared. Okay, is this side always going to be smaller than that? No. Where is the break-even point going to be?
A million squared.
Is it going to be at a million squared?
Square root of a million.
I think it's the square root of a million. Okay, let's just think about that. Because this is going to be, again, when I write this thing out, this is n to the 3 halves times n to the 1 half, right? It's going to be, this side is going to start to win when the square root of n is bigger than this. So actually, maybe I'm wrong. It's 1 million squared, right? Does everybody see that? The moment the square root of n is bigger than this, this isn't going to be true, right? And the square root of n is going to be bigger than this when n is this squared, right? So the answer is no omega, it is a theta. Any questions about that? So this is what you should be doing in your head, or on paper until this is very, very obvious, where the C's and N's come from. Any questions? Okay. The final one is asking about something where now you've got this 2 to the N function. And here, I'm going to actually defer a little bit to the lecture today to give you the details. But the thing that should be clear is, or it's going to have to be, at the very least, to memorize, is that any exponential function is bigger than any polynomial function. A polynomial thing is n to some constant. An exponential is some constant to n. Okay? And this thing, you know, I will know when I look at the talk about dominance a little later. This one is much bigger than that one. And if that's true, which of the situations are we in? Are we in the big O? The big omega? Okay. If this part is really bigger than this part, which one of them are we looking at? We want to know that 2 to the N... If we want to say, is it greater than, again, I have to do this by hand. It's funny, even with 35 years of this, I have to do this by looking at this thing because I get confused about the direction. I was going to give the wrong answer, in fact. What is the answer here? We know that 2 to the n is greater than or equal to c times n to the fourth, okay, which means that the omega is the thing that holds, right? Any questions about that? When you are confused about this, go to the definition. Any questions? Yes?
Is factorial less than exponential but greater than polynomial?
Okay, so we'll talk about dominance. We'll talk about factorial in a few minutes when we talk about dominance. But it turns out that n factorial is bigger than 2 to the n. Okay? And we'll maybe we'll show... Why is n factorial bigger than 2 to the n? Okay, n factorial is basically n to the n, okay, if you know about Stirling's approximation or something like that. It's basically something like n to the n, okay? But we'll talk about dominance in a minute, and so maybe I'm ready to deal with it then. Any questions about that? Yes? It says over, then this is supposed to define upper and lower bounds. You said over and under approximation. I say upper and lower bounds. I think we're meaning the same thing, okay? Any questions? So what we, this is, the reason we're doing this is that we might talk about very, very complicated looking functions. The upper and lower bound will have a nice simple form, and so it is easier to talk about it, right? The big O is our friend, because it's actually going to let us talk about complicated things with simple functions. Any questions? Okay, fair enough. Any other questions about this? Okay, so just a couple of principles in working with the big O. If I ask what is the big O of 2n squared compared to n squared, multiplying something by a constant doesn't change the big O. Okay? Why is that? Because remember, when we're proving these big O relationships, we're making a constant, picking a big enough constant to do our job, right? To make this thing bigger than that. If you make your thing twice as big, one side twice as big, I can just pick a constant twice as big on the other side, and it will still, if it was an upper bound before, it will still be an upper bound before. Does everybody see that? So the functions, as far as we are concerned, the big picture here is that a function like 3n squared is going to be the same as n squared, okay, in a big O-ish sense. Any questions about that? So multiplying a constant by a function, the big O notation-ish, the asymptotic behavior of it is unchanged. Any questions about that? Why that is. The difference is when we multiply two functions by each other, okay, then the asymptotic approximation is the product of those two functions. We did that over here with the n squared. Remember we said n squared was the same thing as n to the 3 halves times n to the 1 half, right? So again, the big O of something multiplied by something is the product, the big O of the product of that. Does that kind of make sense? So functions are different than, functions are things that change as a function of n. Constants are things that don't, okay? Any questions about that? Constants get absorbed in the constants of the big O. Okay, but functions don't. Okay, any questions? Okay, now this, by the way, is going to be the reason why when I have a program with two nested loops, 4i goes from 1 to n, 4j goes to 1 to n. This is why that is an n squared algorithm. Why is it? We have n order n outside loops, each of which is running a loop of size n, right? We have n about n things being multiplied by something of size n. And that's why we get an n squared algorithm here. Any questions? Okay. So that's kind of an important reasoning thing that we just need to know. I think everybody intuits that. Any questions? Okay, any more questions about this kind of analysis quickly? Okay, good. So the big O notation, as I've been using it so far, is just a mathematical way to talk about functions. And you can talk about it for any kind of function. It has nothing to do with algorithms. Mathematicians ran around comfortably talking about the big O notation long before they invented computer scientists. Okay? What we are going to be interested in is using the big O as an approximation mechanism for the function we care about, which is typically the worst case running time of an algorithm. Okay? So when we, I give you, make a statement like, what you got, selection sort is n squared time. What am I actually doing? I'm doing several steps in my head. The first thing that I am doing is somewhere, ideally on a sheet of paper, but if not in my head, I am writing down an algorithm in pseudocode or a programming language. I am going to then analyze that that algorithm and count how many steps it takes in the worst time. That's what I am actually doing when I am doing a big O analysis. Does everybody kind of get that idea? So when I say that, that heap sort is, you know, n log n on average, or n log n, this only makes sense if there is somebody who writes down what heap sort is. Okay, I can sometimes see these things in my head. If you don't see it in your head, write down the program to try to analyze it. The next several slides will start looking at how do we take a program or an algorithm and reason it about its worst case running time. Okay, any questions about it? So here is the selection sort algorithm written in C. Okay? How many of you know C? Some of you. If you don't know C, it's pseudocode, right? It doesn't matter. Okay? How much? What is selection sort? Just to remember, remind ourselves what selection sort is. It is the algorithm where you go through all the items. Okay? You find which one is smallest and then swap it to put the smallest one. This is bad because now suddenly it's sorted already. Well, actually, no. Maybe I'll leave it like that. Let's leave it, let's say, 4, 5. Okay, you swap it. And now I'm going to go through all the items from here on down, find which is smallest. Swap it with its current position and put that into the second spot. I'm now going to go through all the remaining items and swap it, okay? And put which one is there. Does everybody see that? And I'm going to keep, which is the smaller of these two? Swap it. And after that, I am done. Okay? Any questions? So this is what my selection sort is doing. It is looping through n iterations on the outside. It is looking for the min between the ith plus first element and the nth element, trying each one of these in turn and picking the minimum, keeping track of what is the position of the minimum. And then once I've done that, it will do a swap. Okay? Any questions about the algorithm? The algorithm needs to be in your head. Now, what is the worst case running time of this algorithm? Okay? Well, the way I would be thinking about it is here, big O-wise, I'm looking for an upper bound on the time complexity. Does everybody see that? Big O is upper bound. This is a loop that goes around from I plus 1 to N. The smallest I plus 1 ever gets is 1. This loop goes around N times. And it does a constant, uses a constant number of computrons in executing that if statement, right? So there's N steps here. There is a swap which took one step. There was a min that took one step. Big O, what is 1 plus N plus 1? N. Okay? I can be sloppy about it because I'm thinking big O-ish, right? And so I've got something in here that costs me N steps, some constant times N steps. 2N steps, 3N steps, doesn't matter. And it's going to be executed N times. N times a constant times N is big O of N squared. This is a big O of N squared algorithm. Any questions about what I did? Okay, yes. So I'm going to swap me with myself if you know, I could say if I'm with myself, don't swap me. It could be that I'll say just swap me with myself. I could either do a test and to avoid the swap or avoid the swap test and do the swap. Both of them take constant time. It doesn't make too much difference, right? So long as my program doesn't crash when you swap me with myself, right? What do you get when you swap me with myself? Hopefully me, right? Any questions? Okay, does everybody see why this is n squared? Okay, and this is the kind of analysis that we're going to be doing in here. Any questions? And that's basically what I said there. Now, last class, after class, some people asked me a kind of interesting question or an important question. They said, sure, n loops, each of which, n iterations, each of which takes at most n times, takes at most n squared, and that's an upper bound on the running time. But how do you know that you have the right running time? Maybe this was really an order n thing, okay? Suppose, let's say, I told you that we know that every person in here is worth less than or equal to the value of the richest guy on Earth. The richest guy is worth $100 billion. We've got 200 people in here. Do we have the amount of money in this room is less than or equal to $2 trillion. Does everybody see that that's an upper bound? Does everybody see that that's a very, very gross upper bound? Okay? It would be bad if you had told me that selection sort was order n cubed. I couldn't really argue with you. The worst case running time of selection sort is O of n cubed. Okay? Are you saying a true thing? Yes. Are you saying an interesting thing? Not so interesting, right? Okay? It gets more and more interesting the closer this is to the right answer. Okay? How do you tell that your answer for what the worst case running time is, okay, is right? You need some kind of an argument to say that on at least one instance, it takes at least some constant times n squared. At least omega n squared time on at least one answer. So how is it that I look at selection sort and say that it really has to take n squared time? Okay? How do you say it?
Reverse sorted list.
You say a reverse sorted list. The wonderful thing about selection sort is it doesn't matter what you give it. It's going to do the exact same thing here on every single instance. So reverse sorted list doesn't really make any difference on selection sort. On some other, on insertion sort, it does. But selection sort, it doesn't. How would I convince you that this really, really does take n squared time? Okay? And I'm not just rounding it up. The way I would convince you, some of you guys say you can convince me. The way I'm going to convince myself is to say, let's look at the first n over 2 iterations. Okay? So when I is less than or equal to n over 2, this loop is going to go around n over 2 times for I being less than n over 2, right? That's the first n over 2 iterations, right? How many times will I pass through this list for those first n over 2 iterations? The first time I will pass through all n elements. The second time I will pass through n minus 1 elements. Third time, n minus 2. On the n over second one, how many times will I pass through that loop?
N minus n over 2,
which is? What is n? Minus n over 2. What is that?
N over 2.
So what do I say? In the first n over 2 iterations, each time this thing is going to use at least n over 2 steps. Does everybody see that? The last step for when I is equal to n, this one is easy. It only does one step, right? But for the first n over 2 iterations, each time this loop is taking at least n over 2 steps, right? So the total work done is at least n over 2 times n over 2. Does everybody see that? What happens on the last n over 2 iterations is much more work, right? So this is an argument that, in fact, this thing does take at least theta of n squared, take theta of n squared time. Yes? This runs n minus I times, right? This runs n minus I. This loop will run n minus I times. Exactly right. That's what my problem is. Does everybody see that when I is big, n minus I is going to be small? Does everybody see that? So it'd be wrong to say this thing always takes n squared time, really takes n squared time, because I have n loops, each of which takes n steps, right? That's not right, right? As an upper bound, it's true. But does it really take that much? No, the last one only is going to take one step. The last one's only going to take two steps. How do you tell me this is really n squared? The way I'm going to tell you that it does always take at least n, big theta of n squared time, is that on the first n over 2 loops out here, it's going to use at least n over 2 of those steps each time, right? So just that part of the job is going to take n over 2 times n over 2, meaning n squared over 4 steps, right? We know it will take less than or equal to n squared steps. That's the big O. We proved that. I just showed you it will take at least n squared over 4 steps. That's my theta, right? Any questions about it? So I'm often sloppy about giving you the bad example, but your analysis is tight when you can give me a bad example the same way as your analysis goes. Any questions about that? Okay. Any questions about how I did that? Or why I did it? That's an important question. A question like, why did you do that is a good question. Any questions? Okay, good. Now let's do this again. Again, if you're really pedantic and careful and put these things down, you can count exactly how many times that loop went around. And it turns out that, you know, it's the sum as I goes from 1 to n, which is n times n plus 1 over 2. Okay? That's why it's theta of n squared, because it is exactly n squared over n times n minus 1 over 2. Recognize that if we're thinking in big O world, or big theta world, that's more detail than we usually care about. Any questions? And certainly on a more complicated algorithm, it's going to be very, very hard to get an exact answer. Any questions? Okay, good. Let's look at another algorithm, which is insertion sort. In insertion sort, what we are going to do is, let's sort our thing by insertion sort. Originally, we had 2, 1, 3, 5, 4. What we're going to do is, one by one, we're going to build a sorted list and then slide the next element into its proper position. Right? So 2, originally, that's a perfectly sorted list by itself. Right? Good. Let's now try what happens with 1. It's not right unless we slide 1 over. Now that's a perfectly sorted list. Does everybody see that? Actually, we happen to have a 0 here. This happens to be a 0, just to make it more interesting. 3, okay. It doesn't have to go anywhere. 5, it doesn't have to go anywhere. Does everybody see that? 0, kabunk, kabunk, kabunk. In fact, it goes all the way to the front. And so these guys have to move to make room to put the 0. That's what insertion sort is, right? And lo and behold, that's what I'm doing here. For each of the n possible elements under consideration, I'm going to have this while loop that's going to ask myself, walk the item over until I find the place where, okay, it belongs. And then move everybody else over. As I move it up, I'm going to move the other element over to accommodate it. Okay, if you look at the code, that's what it does. But you understand what the algorithm, maybe you have your own code now fixed in your eyes of how you're implementing this, right? What is the complexity of this thing? The outer loop goes around n times. The inner loop, my God, this is a while loop. While loops are trickier than for loops. For loops, we told you how many times they were going to go around, right? While loop is complicated. How many times does it go around? What I can tell you is it goes around at most n times each time, right? If you're going to slide the thing over, after n steps, it's going to fall off the edge, right? So I still say that in analyzing this thing, it is n things, each of which this thing is going to stop when j is equal to 0. It's going to stop after at most n iterations. N times at most n is at most n squared, right? So that gives me a big O running time on this, right? And a big O of n squared running time on this. Does everybody see that? Any questions? Now, is it theta of n squared? The running time, is the running time not only upper bounded by n squared, but is the upper bound running time in the worst case really n squared? Okay, how many people say yes? How many people say no? Okay, I think we got confusion. Okay. What is going to happen here? First of all, does everybody agree that insertion sort is order of n squared as an upper bound? Big O. Okay, any people disagree with that and want me to go through with that? It is n times at most n, that's n squared, at most n squared. Now, if I want to argue that in the worst case, this algorithm really does take n squared, I need to show you an example where it does. What kind of an example would do that? Okay? What kind of an input would do that, yeah? Reversed ordered list. Notice if I gave you a sorted list, on a sorted list, insertion sort's going to say, fine, 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 done. Right? That took only n steps, right? But if I gave you a reverse sorted list, what is this thing going to do? Oops, I got a swap. Oops, swap, swap, I got a swap. Oop, I've got a swap, swap, swap. Oops, I got a swap, 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 swap. Right? How many steps are being done on this? Well, the way I would think about it, the same kind of analysis really as before, right? You could say that it's the sum of 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 and get an answer of, well, it is n times n plus 1 over 2, right? See, it is n squared in the worst case. Or you could do the thing I tried to do to say, well, look, all of these guys, the second half of the elements, each move at least n over 2 distance, right? And therefore, the total work is at least n over 2 times n over 2 on this, right? Both of them are sufficient to prove that the worst case running time is omega of n squared. You got a big O, you got an omega, you got a theta. This is an n squared algorithm. Any questions about that? Any questions about how we do this? You write the algorithm down, you look at it, you round things up, and that gives you a big O. Yes?
Would you say that in the best case, it's only around n times?
Yeah.
So then there could be no constant c that we can multiply by n squared.
Okay, wait, oh, I see. So now this is what the confusion is. We agree that the big O notation is talking about a particular function. We're interested in the behavior of a particular function, right? What is the function we are caring about here? It is the case that we are caring about, okay, that the function that is written down, f sub n, is equal to the worst case running time of selection sort, or insertion sort, excuse me, on n items. This is the function we're interested in, right? So what happens to the best case here? You're saying, what about the best case permutation? It doesn't matter. We're not talking about the best case permutation, right? We're talking about algorithms in here. What does it matter about what you ate for lunch or anything like that? It just doesn't matter, right? It's not in the function here, right? If I was asking, what was your weight over time, whether you ate lunch mattered? Likewise, F of n, we are generally talking about, unless we say otherwise, the worst case running time of the algorithm. So the big O is obtained by rounding up. The theta, the omega giving us the theta, is by showing that on some example, it actually takes as is as bad, in a big O sense, as the, what we said our upper bound was. Yes? Okay, you mean, isn't it that, okay, the reverse permutation proves that it is omega of n squared. Because this function says the worst case running time. Okay? The function you are caring about is, for any algorithm, what is the worst case running time of that algorithm? That is what we are usually caring about, right? And if I'm asking what the worst case running time is, okay, well, by analyzing the code to show what it does in the worst case, I'm getting an upper bound on the worst case running time. And to actually prove that the worst case running time is that bad, I show you an example where it actually is that bad, right? To get the theta, I need to show you the instance where it's why it is that bad. But because we're talking about the worst case running time, the best case doesn't matter, right? You go to your credit, your bank. They say, we will tell you how much money you give us back. It's either the amount that you borrowed plus interest or a dollar, and we get to decide. How much money are you going to be paying back? Okay? The upper bound there, right? The worst case. We're dealing with the worst case. Yes? No. This is a distinction we have to be clear about. There are two separate things going on. Okay, let's go over here. There is, we use the big O. Omega and theta n are our ways of talking about functions. That's all that it is. We could talk about Bill Gates' wealth like this. We could talk about anything we want like this, any function. Then there is, what function do we care about? And F sub n that we care about is the worst case time of an algorithm. Right? This is what I am caring about. Okay? To describe this, I am using the big O notation. Does everybody see that? Any questions about that? How many of you are still a little bit confused here? Don't be afraid. Any questions about that? So this stuff is stuff that we talk about any function like that. Okay? But the function we care about in this class is the worst case running time. Any questions? This has to be clear. If this is not clear, it is going to be a very depressing semester. Yes? How does omega play into it? Again, I am trying to give you an idea of the worst case running time. Okay? When you are coming here, here is the time complexity of insertion sort. Okay? One of you yells out, what is the worst case time complexity of insertion sort? If you say O of n cubed, you are right. You've said something that is truthful. Why? Because big O is an upper bound on what we care about, right? The worst case running time really is less than or equal to a constant time n cubed, right? But you see that that's not a very interesting statement. You could just as easily have said that it is big O of n to the fourth. Okay? And that's also a true statement. The worst case running time really is less than a constant times n to the fourth. What we really want for this to be good is to say that we have a tight knowledge of what the worst case running time is. Right? And for insertion sort, if I can show you an example such that on that example, the algorithm takes omega of n squared. That means that the running time, worst case running time, has to be greater than or equal to some constant times n squared, right? And then when I give you a tighter, and now you recognize, hey, there's a big gap from n to the fourth and n squared. I wonder what the right answer is. If you give me a tighter analysis of the algorithm, so the algorithm really is big upper bounded by n squared. Now I say I know the right answer, right? You have proven to me that it takes less than or equal to some constant times n squared, always. You have proven there is at least one example where it takes at least a constant times n squared. I have a big O, I have a big omega, I got a theta, and I know the right answer. Okay? Any questions about that? This has to be clear. Yes?
So what we're doing is we're looking at the function that describes the worst case running time of the algorithm, which in this case is n times n plus 1 over 2.
Yeah. Perfect. That's actually exactly right. Okay? So this guy is saying that if we were talking about selection sort, okay, that in fact f of n really happened to be n times n plus 1 over 2. That was what it is in the worst case. Okay? But this may be too hard for me to reason about precisely. What I have proven is that f of n is greater than or equal to n squared over 4. That was that n over 2 times n over 2 thing. And by saying n loops that are at most n, I proved that it was less than n squared, right? The real number happens to be this, but my upper bound and my lower bound were enough to say that the worst case running time is n theta of n squared. And that's what I really care about. Okay? That's the level of detail I care about. Any questions? Okay? Yes?
I have a question for the f of n equals n times n plus 1 over 2.
Yeah.
Where did the n plus 1
come? Well, if you sum up the numbers 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4, this is what you get up to n. Okay? The question of where did I get that from, this is why I don't like to do it, right? This is why I like to deal with upper bounds and lower bounds, because they are easier to reason about than this exact question of, oh, why is it, you know, right? I got to be very careful. I don't want to be careful. I want to say it's bigger than, it's less than this and bigger than this. Any questions? Yes? For insertion sort, is the lower bound n? The answer is no. What is this case with lower the insertion sort? This is the worst case complexity. If I can show you an example where it takes n squared, then the worst case is n squared. Right? Does everybody see that? Let's say I take a look at, you know, if I want to talk about what is the let's say that I want to make a guarantee. Maybe these examples are, forget the example. Okay, let's just go back and say this again. We are talking about the worst case time of an algorithm. If I can show you an example where it takes a certain amount of time, the worst case has to be at least as bad as what I show you. Is that right? Okay, if I take somebody and do something bad to them. Okay, it proves I can do something at least that bad to them, right? I can also shoot them and do other things to them. Then that's even worse, right? But what can I do? By showing you that reverse permutation, I have proven to you that insertion sort on this thing is going to take at least n over 2 times n over 2 steps on that, right? If on this example it takes at least this, the worst case is at least this bad, right? Can only get worse with something else maybe. But if it is n squared over 4 bad, and I have shown you that is always a way to do it in n squared, now I have a theta bound on what f of n really is. Okay? Any questions about this? Okay? This is important to figure out. Okay? And if you are confused by this, you talk to my partner, you talk to your partner, you talk to me, you talk to the DA, and you figure this out. Okay? Any questions about it? Okay? This has to be clear. Okay? Any questions? Okay. Let me talk about one other aspect of the big O that's kind of important to realize here, which is that what's great about the big O notation is that it is going to be about, ultimately, a small number of different function types that we're going to care about, and that every algorithm is going to get banged into a small number of different possible big O type complexities. Okay? And the thing that we're going to be caring about is something kind of known as dominance. Okay? When is it that one thing grows much, much faster than another? Okay? We want an algorithm that's going to do well in the end. Okay? For big N. Okay? And the way I want to talk about asymptotic dominance is to talk about two different ways that you can have rocket ships go through in space. People want to send rockets from here to the stars, okay? And there's two designs people are thinking about. One is you take a rocket, you give it a big engine, and you have it shoot off, burn all its fuel, and hurl through space at some vast speed, right? Runs out of gas, but then it coasts because you never slow down in space, right? It doesn't hit it until you hit a planet, and you're not going to hit one for a while, right? Another way that they talk about launching spaceships is a solar sail. And this is this idea that there's sort of this solar wind out there, this light that bangs on something. And when light bangs on something, it exerts a very slight pressure on it. So a solar sail is this giant sail, and they're waiting for the sun to go and blow on the spaceship, right? And the sun is always blowing. It's nice, gentle solar wind. Which rocket is going to be faster going through space? You want to get out to to some other solar system. You could have this badass rocket that shot off at the fast at the beginning, or this thing that's got this kite on it that's slowly getting faster because of that gentle wind blowing on it. Who wins? Okay? You can imagine the spaceman on both of these things. The first guy with the rocket shoots off. He's laughing at the guy behind him, right? But what's going to happen? He's going to be moving at a constant speed. The speed of the other guy is slowly accelerating, right? A couple years later, he's going to look out the window, and suddenly the guy's going to be there, right? And slowly that guy is going to pass him, right? And then he's never going to look back. Does everybody see that? So we are interested in being the solar sail guy. We are interested in what happens, which rocket is fast, which ship is faster? The one with the sail or the one with the rocket? Okay? In the long run, it is the one with the sail. Does everybody see that? The one with the sail will win in the long run. And that is the idea of asymptotic dominance. Any questions? So, to be more specific, we're going to look at algorithms in this class, and they're going to fall into a small number of buckets of complexity. Some are going to be constant time. Some are going to be log n time. What's an algorithm that takes log n time? Does anyone know? Binary search. Okay, fine. Does anyone know an algorithm that takes n time?
Search in a linked list,
right? What anything that takes n log n time?
Merge sort.
Does anything take n squared time?
Bubble sort.
Does anything take 2 to the n time? Finding all possible subsets happens to be that. Anything that takes n factorial time?
Bogo sort.
Or the searching through all traveling salesman tours to think what we look at that, right? The important thing is, if you think about the algorithms as basically having these complexities, if you look at how big a problem you can solve with each one of these algorithms on a fast machine, there is a big difference, big O-wise, that is going to dominate anything that has to do with constants. If you have an example on a problem of size, a billion, a log n time will do it in a tiny amount of time. A linear time algorithm will do it in a reasonable time. An n log n time algorithm may be reasonable. An n squared algorithm stops being reasonable, right? When you look at something bigger, a 2 to the n algorithm starts out actually being pretty fast, but ends up becoming unreasonable at a certain point, right? And an n factorial algorithm becomes unreasonable at an earlier point, okay? We're going to care about, that's why we are concerned about whether our algorithm is big theta of n log n versus n squared. We don't care about whether it's 2 times n log n or 3 times n log n. We care about these big differences, okay? So this is basically what we said somehow, that there's some implication here. So we say that one function f of n dominates g of n if the limit of f of n, of g of n over f of n, okay, goes to 0. So if f of n is a faster growing function as a function of n than g of n, the limit of g of n over f of n is going to be 0. Okay? What is the limit of... let's see, do I have one of these things here? What is the limit of n squared over n cubed as n gets to infinity? Does everybody see that's going to 0? That's going to be 1 over n. This is going to get to 0, right? So n cubed dominates n squared. Does everybody see that? What about if we have n squared and n to the 2.01? What is going to be the limit here as n goes to infinity? Can't do that in my head, but what is it? If I divide this thing out, this is the same as 1 over n to the 0.01. Does everybody see that? And now it's obvious to me, as n goes to infinity, this thing is going to get bigger and bigger, right? As n goes to infinity, does 1 get bigger? No. So something stays the same versus something that's getting bigger. As n gets to infinity, this is going to be go to 0, right? What about n squared over 2n squared? What is the limit of this going to be as n goes to infinity? This is a half. Does everybody see that? This is really going to be n over 2. Okay. I mean, 1 over 2. Okay? Any questions about it? So this is kind of our tool, the asymptotics, the big O, is our notion of... when functions differ, okay? Two functions differ if one dominates the other. Any questions? Okay, one thing for the homework just to note here. There is a thing called little o, okay? And we say that f of n is little o of g of n if it grows strictly smaller than f of n, okay? So on the homework, when you say, gee, what did he mean by little o? Take a look at this slide. Okay. I mean, on the daily problem next time. Any questions? Okay, yes.
So, really quickly, in the last class thing, so if something is big O of n and not little o of, sorry, big O of f of n and not little o of f of n, it's pretty reasonable, sort of exciting big O, right? Because it's sort of like very close to the...
Okay. What I care about, the big thing that people have to keep it simple, if I have something that f of n is big O of g of n, and f of n is big omega of g of n, then f of n is theta of g of n. That means that it is g of n as far as we're concerned. Let's leave it at that for now. Any questions? Yes?
Are there limits that define O, omega, and theta?
Are there limits that... So, in the formal definitions of these things, these things are associated with limits. If you think about it, we are interested with these things of things once they are greater than 0, right? We're things about things that go off to n. So there are connections between the underpinnings of these definitions and limits, okay? But I don't want to get that formal about it, okay? I don't think that's helpful here. Any questions? Okay, good.
Sorry.
Yeah.
What do you mean exactly by grow strictly slower than?
Grow strictly slower than, okay? N cubed grows strictly slower than n to the fourth. Does everybody agree with that? Does n cubed grow strictly slower than 2 times n cubed? No, not in a big O sense, okay? So if there is an asymptotic difference, if there's a dominance difference between them, the smaller number function is dominated, is little o of it. That's what it really means. Any questions? Okay, what is the big point here? I've actually said these things, this notion of dominance. We say that n raised to the 8th power dominates n to the b-th power if a is bigger than b, because the limit of n to the b, okay, n to the a is bigger than n to the b, the limit of n a, b over n a is goes to 0, right? That's what this dominance thing can. So a higher exponent dominates a lower exponent. It's also true that if I look at something n squared, versus n squared plus n. N is little o of n squared, right? It grows strictly slower than. What do I know? What is the ratio? The limit of n squared over n squared plus n. What is the limit going to be? Okay, as n gets big enough, this is going to be 1, right? This is small potatoes. Okay. So adding a smaller term doesn't change the dominance. Any questions about that? Okay, yes?
Would you say if f of n equals theta of g of n, then it can never be f of n equals little g of n?
If f of n is theta of g of n, then by our all geometric things, f of n and g of n are the same thing. Right? F of n being theta of g of n means they are the same thing. One doesn't dominate each other, you know. Okay?
So they can never be little o.
Then there's not a little o, because little o means dominated. One, I can't dominate you if neither of us dominate each other, right? F of n equals theta of g of n means they are the same thing. Any questions? Okay? So what do you need to know? Okay, you need to know two sets of things, and then I can maybe leave this big O stuff aside for a while, hopefully forever, okay? First thing is that many of the algorithm time, that there's a small number of functions that will represent the algorithms we will generally talk about in this class, okay? We will see algorithms that run in all of these time complexities. Does anybody have an algorithm that runs in n cubed time, by the way? What algorithm do you know that runs in n cubed time, yeah? Multiplying two n by n matrices together took n cubed time, right? But generally speaking, these are the functions that we will see, and this is their dominance relation. And we always are looking for an algorithm, if it possibly exists, that is a lower order function that is dominated by other things, right? Because if we can find a bigger, a lower complexity class, a lower order function, an algorithm that runs in a strictly slow dominated thing, it will be much faster for big N. Okay? So you need to know that log N is bigger than 1, N is bigger than log N, N times log N is bigger than N. That should be pretty obvious, because N times log N has got to be bigger than N, right? N squared is bigger than log n. Why is that? N times n is bigger than n times log n, right? N cubed is bigger than n squared. Why? Well, that's because n times n squared is bigger than 1 times n squared. 2 to the n is bigger than n cubed. Well, you got to know that, okay? And you know, that shouldn't be hard to be convinced of, okay? That's, I think, the easiest way to deal with it. Yes? Okay, now you can get into weird functions all the time. I'll deal with this weird function, but what was it that you asked about? 2 raised to the n versus 2 raised to the n plus 1. What is the relationship between these two functions? This is an interesting question now, right? Let's think about it. This is worth thinking about, everybody. What is the relationship between 2 raised to the n and 2 to the n plus 1? Is it a big O? Is it an omega? Or is it a theta? Let's think about it. Who here thinks theta? It is theta. Why is it theta? Well, this is really 2 to the n plus 1 is 2 to the n times 2, right? Is 2 to the n less than or equal to some constant times 2 to the 2 to times 2 to the n? Certainly, right? If n was equal to, c was equal to 1 would do it, right? And likewise, is there a constant c such that c times 2 times 2 to the n is less than 2 to the n? Is there a constant that does it? 1/2 is a good one, right? So in fact, there's a theta relationship between these two. Any questions? Write that down and think about it afterwards, okay? Any questions? Okay. Now, if you take a good enough algorithms class, of which this is not, okay, you will see that there are other algorithms, more advanced things that run in more weird-looking functions. Okay? Recognize that there are other complexities of algorithm functions where there are algorithms in here. And if you look at these things, you'll see that this is an ordering of them. But in general, for everything we do in the class, I think just about everything will run in one of the functions I had before. Any questions about that? Any questions about this notion of dominance? Okay, good. Now, I want to talk about one thing that is important for the rest of... So please stay here. Give me my full time today. I want to talk about logarithms, because a lot of the functions, algorithms in here, we're going to see things that run in time where there is a logarithm in it. And many of you are going to shake your head, where does the log come from? Okay, the log is not a thing from multiplying or... The log is going to come from its definition. Okay, and I want everybody to come here and know what a logarithm is. Okay? A logarithm is, as you learned in high school, an inverse exponential function. When you say that b raised to the x equals y, what you are really saying is that x is log b of y. These are two synonymous statements, okay? And you should know that, okay? And so if this is confusing, I want you to circle it and think about it. But what is it saying? Just by definition, x is the power that you raise b to get y. Isn't that what x is? According to this thing on the left, x is the power that you raise b to get y. What is that power? It turns out the name of that power is the log base b of y-th power. Okay? Any questions? This is by definition. This is what the log function is. Okay? The guy who invented it, okay, defined it this way. And that's why it is true. Any questions about it? So you should know that definition and be comfortable with that. But in algorithm world, the reasons why algorithms are going to be log n is going to be the following. A logarithm is really going to be telling you how many times you start from 1 or a small number and double it until you get to n. Or equivalently, start with something of size n and halve it until you get down to 1. Okay? Logarithms come from processes of repeatedly multiplying by something or repeatedly dividing by something. That is where logs come from. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay? Now, why do I say that? Suppose, let's say, I have a number here that is 2 to the n. How many times do I have to take 1 and double it till I get to 2 to the n? Okay, let's try this thing. Suppose I have 2 to the 8th 3 is equal to 8, right? How many times do I have to double 1 to get to 8? Well, I can't do that in my head, but by doubling I get 2, 4, 8. Does everybody see that it's 3 times? How many times do I have 8 till I get down to 1? 1, 2, 3. Does everybody see that? The exponent, meaning the logarithm, okay, of that of this is the number of doublings or halvings it takes. Any questions? So I need you to refresh your idea of what the definition is. But in your kishkas, I need you to remember, okay, what the that it has to do with, we're talking about doublings or halvings come out to be logs. Any questions? Okay, let's look at an example. Everyone here has heard of binary search, okay? Binary search was you search through n items by you look in the middle and you decide if it's above or below the median element. And then you throw half of it away. And on the next comparison, you're looking at something that's how big? Half as big as what you had, right? When do you find the element? When you have one element left to consider, right? If I give you a phone book with one name in it, how long does it take you to find that name? Well, one step, right? So why does binary search take log n time? It's because every time we have it, and it's how many times, if we start with n things and we have them, how many halving steps are there till we get down to one? How many of them? Didn't hear that. How many? Okay, that's right, because it's the number of halving steps. Any questions? How many leaves are there in a tree with n of height n? If you have a tree with n leaves, how many levels tall is that tree? Well, when I start out with a tree with one level, is only one leaf. If I make it taller, I get two leaves. If I make it taller again, I get 4 leaves. How many leaves will I have on the next step? 8. And how many will I have on the next step below that? And how many below that? Okay. How many doublings will it take till I get to n? How many doublings? 2 to the what is going to be equal to n. How many doublings does it take to get to n? I didn't hear that. Okay, log n. Does everybody see that? Why is that? I don't see where the multiplication is. It's because by definition, the log is the number of doublings till you get from 1 to n. Okay, any questions about that? Okay, any questions? Okay, why are logs associated with trees? Well, what do you get when you cut down a tree? Get a log. Okay, good. Okay, now, let's try one. Okay, this is something we were running low. Let me tell you about, okay, I want us to do this. I'm sorry about that. One other thing to note in a big log, some of you may be saying, oh, he's talking about doubling. But not all logs are base 2. Why is he talking about doubling? Sometimes we might, what if we had a base 3 tree, where we have 3 nodes after it? In high school, you learned this expression, that log base b of a is equal to log base c of a divided by log base C of B. How many people recognize this from high school? Okay, I can never remember it exactly, but you recognize it. What does it mean? It means something very interesting to us. Okay? It means that suppose A was N. Think of there as being an N here and an N here. What does this mean? It means that the log base B, maybe it's 2 of N, is equal to the log base 4 of n times the log of 2 base 4 or 4 base 2, right? Something like that, right? What is the log of 2 base 4, or 4 base 2? It is a constant. It has nothing to do with n.